Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories. Good morning. I'm Jesse, and this is Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM. Thanks for tuning in this morning. This is, as I said, CJSF 90.1 FM, the campus community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from the unceded ancestral territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Coquitlam peoples. We stream online at cjsf.ca. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, SoundCloud, all those places. You can also get that stuff, podcasts of our programs and things at cjsf.ca. Sorry for a momentary confusion there. I was trying to sort out my headphones, couldn't figure out why I couldn't hear my own voice. Turns out I plugged an in cable into the out cable, and that doesn't give you anything. Anyway, more mindless babbling from me here over the next hour, but mostly what you'll hear on Speak Up today is an interview with Stacey Brown about Kittynomics and her book, I Will Own a Castle. That was done by a new CJSF volunteer producer, interviewer, Kyra Carson. Some new music from local artists as well, and who knows, maybe we'll do some weather. It's currently looking pretty great out there, but The looming specter of winter is out there, so I'll get into that, and I don't know, we'll play around with the remaining time. The interview's about half an hour, so I'm going to get that going in a few minutes, but first, some local music. This is the band Slam Dunk, who hung around in Vancouver for a while, and then were out on tour with Arcade Fire, and currently sort of part of the Built to Spill ensemble, following around those folks and playing shows with them and playing basketball with Doug Marsh and all that fun stuff. Anyway, they put out an album late last year called In Hell, after a long silence, and I'm going to play a track from it called Stranger. This is that on Speak Up.
Take a knee to new storm.
Stranger by Slam Dunk off their new record In Hell here on Speak Up, CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. Quick bit of weather for you. Currently, it's about zero. Partly cloudy, mix of sun. Looking pretty nice out there. A little chilly, but not too bad. Tomorrow, it was looking like snow, but they've downgraded that in Burnaby to rain, at the very least. Who knows, up here on the mountain, still looking at maybe about a centimeter of snow down off the mountain. So up here, who knows? Saturday, maybe a little bit of snow over reaching over Friday night into Saturday. So if we are struck by snow, just take slow. Give yourself some extra time. Realize that it's going to be a mess everywhere, and don't try to get anywhere in a hurry. That's my advice. You've heard it before, I'm sure. Let's do some quick community headlines. Simon Fraser University has appointed a new president. Joy Johnson will take over the role on September 1st, 2020, succeeding the current president, Andrew Petter. Johnson is currently the vice president of research and international here at SFU. And is purportedly a big advocate of the gondola. So we'll see. Maybe there'll be a big push from SFU to get that gondola built in the next little bit. Look forward to that. It's also here in Burnaby time for the Kushiro Cup, which is an award for the city's most outstanding citizen, a resident who goes above and beyond for their community. It's named after Kushiro, Japan, which is Burnaby's sister city, and it's awarded to a local volunteer who demonstrates an extraordinary commitment of time and energy to their community. So, the 2018 Citizen of the Year was the Burn Creek Secondary teacher, Leda Falsetto, recognized for work mentoring refugee students. So you can nominate someone from now until February 21st for the 2019 Kushiro Cup. That's for the last year. And the winner will be announced on March 23rd. If you have someone you want to nominate or you just want more info, go to burnaby.ca/citizen of the year. That's burnaby.ca/citizen of the year. That's all I got for community headlines. Let's go now to an interview that one of CJSF's newer producers, Kyra, did. She recorded this on her phone. She had a phone conversation with Stacey Brown, who is the founder of groundbreaking Canadian children's financial programming, Kiddynomics, the author of I Will Own a Castle, and an advocate for financial literacy education among children. As I said, CJSF producer Kyra Carson spoke with Stacey over the phone last week about her writing, advocacy, the importance of acknowledging mentors, and more. So without further ado, here is their conversation.
Okay, so Stacey, you are the author of the children's book, I Will Own a Castle, and the owner of Kiddynomics, correct?
Yes.
Yes. What came first, the book or Kiddynomics?
The book actually came first. So the book was written about 2 years ago now. It was published in June of 2017. Mm-hmm. And that started just by having a simple conversation with my daughter, actually. And at the time, not the time of the publishing of the book, but at the time, she was about 5 years old. And my daughter is born at the end of October. And we usually have like a Halloween dress-up party, birthday party for her. Yeah. So I was asking her in the dollar store, funny enough, I was asking her, hey, well, what do you want to be this year for your birthday? And she goes, well, Mom, I want to be three things. I want to be Dora, I want to be Princess Tiana, and I want to be Doc McStuffins. So I start laughing because I'm like, okay, well, that's a lot of things to be on your birthday, right? And she goes to me, well, Mom, you always tell me that I can be anything that I want to be. So I'm dying now, right? Because I'm like, yeah. Yes, I always tell you you can be anything you want to be, but it's not really meant in that way, but of course, you know, as her five-year-old self, that's what she takes it as. So that was no problem. But I said to her, when we got home, I was talking to her about, again, like what she wants to be. And I said to her, well, you know what? Instead of just being a Disney princess, how about we own a piece of Disney? And she goes, oh, does that mean that I can get all the toys I want? And I was like, yes, of course, a five-year-old, that's what they're going to think, right?
Yeah.
So this is me trying to explain stocks to a five-year-old.
Right.
And so that's what we ended up doing. We bought stocks in Disney. So now she owns Disney stocks, and it's been a few years now. So we track her stock in Disney. But it was a good learning lesson for her, just to think that she could be more than a princess. She can actually own the castle that she lives in. So that's how the book came about. So I said, okay, well, you know, if I'm having such a hard time explaining, you know, stocks and financial literacy to my five-year-old, coming from a background of teaching financial literacy to young adults, because I've chaired boards, I've done this, and I'm just like, okay, well, you know what? It's so vital to teach financial literacy at a way younger age, because if kids grow up learning ABCs and 1-2-3s, well, they should be learning financial literacy, because the younger that they learn it, they will grow up having a healthier relationship towards finances and towards their financial success. Right?
Oh, absolutely.
So I just thought, okay, you know what? Let's write a book. I said to her, you know what? We're going to write a children's book. And the premise was based on a little girl that wanted to do something for her birthday. And we talked about it. And then we decided to not just be a Disney princess or to be a princess, but to actually own the castle. So that's how our book got started. And that's where we wrote it. My daughter and I wrote it. It took us about a year with doing the illustrations. And the great thing was, we got the illustrations done by a student here in Toronto. She actually wants to be a children's book illustrator.
And, oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was. I love the fact that she's young, and, you know, they say about millennials, the people say all sorts of things, and I was like, she was such a go-getter. I really loved working with her.
Yeah.
She did all the illustrations for the book, and that took about a year, and then we got it, and then we had it published. So, yeah, that's how that book came about.
Oh, that's amazing. I bought the online version of the book, and I was reading it the other night, and I would say the book is more than just the book, because you have, like, discussion questions in the back, and you have all these questions to get, you know, the children's gears turning still in their brain.
Yeah, so I did discussion questions and definition questions, because we really wanted the book to be something that you can discuss either at home or in the classroom, right? Because we just want to open up the dialogue to financial literacy.
For teachers and parents, right?
For teachers and parents.
Yeah.
Most people don't know where or how to start. Like, how do you approach this subject, right, with your kids, especially when they're younger? So this is just a way to open up the dialogue to get that conversation going.
Absolutely. Do you, because I think you've talked about this before, how this financial literacy isn't taught in schools at all, and I would agree with that. Do you have any of your own theories as to why that might be?
Well, here's the thing. The thing is that most parents grow up thinking that financial literacy is taught in schools. They think that, okay, like, you go to school and they'll teach you stuff about finances, but that's not the case. So parents think that it's taught in school, and teachers think that, or the school, for some reason, the school board thinks that, you know what, I guess it's taught at home, right?
Yeah.
So we're like missing, like, passing ships in like different times, right? Like, I'm coming in the evening, you're coming in the morning type of things, are like passing ships. And the thing is that it's not being taught in schools. And I think more parents should be aware of the fact that it's not taught in schools, or very little is. And what is taught in schools is really starting at an older age for kids. So teenagers, like high schools, because I've gone into high schools and I've taught financial literacy courses. And so it is taught a little bit in high schools, but it's pretty
minimal
in you know, middle school and grade school for the younger kids, right? Which
Absolutely.
Is truly where they're going to miss out, because if you start teaching it when they're teenagers, well, a lot of teenagers already have jobs, right? A lot of them.
Have already made like a lot of mistakes with money, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So if you start in high school when they've already started working and they've already developed an unhealthy relationship towards financial literacy, well, that doesn't make any sense, right? Like, that doesn't make much sense. But if you start teaching them at a younger age so that when they do start earning a paycheck, right, beyond mm-hmm. what they may earn for an allowance or stuff, something like that at home, when they actually start earning a paycheck in the workplace, well, then they can make more educated decisions as to what they're going to do with their money and not just go buy the latest phone.
Well, exactly, exactly. I think back to being a kid, and there's so many things that I just wish someone had told me, you know? Is there anything, when you think back to being a kid, is there any small thing that you just wish someone had told you back then about money?
I think that the biggest thing is, and what we've started in our household, is making savings a rule in our household.
Mm.
And I think if we grow up in the mindset of making savings a rule in the household, it will definitely develop healthy relationships towards financial literacy and not thinking, okay, well, I'm going to spend every last dollar that I
right.
have because, okay, next week I'm going to get a next paycheck, right? Like that's,
right.
I mean, I remember my mindset as a teenager. I worked from a very, very young age. And it was always like, okay, well, I can spend this paycheck because next week I'm going to get a next one and then the following one, right? So I didn't necessarily have a savings mindset. But if I did, like all of the stuff that I bought that was so irrelevant.
Exactly. It could be.
Like if I had saved that money, I would have been way further ahead.
Stacey, that's exactly what I think too. I think back and go, why did I buy that? I could really use that $50 in my savings account right now.
Right. Like, and the stuff that you think about that you bought back then, like it's just like, really?
Oh,
like sometimes, you know, when you rummage through things, you're just like, oh, this is so old. Like, oh, it's so ugly. Why would you buy that?
Oh, absolutely. Stacey, how old are you? You have two daughters, correct?
I do.
How old are
one
your
is nine. So the 9-year-old is the one that the book is based off of. She was six. And then I have a 2-year-old now. So I have a two and a 9-year-old.
Oh, wow. So have you started teaching financial literacy to your 2-year-old now?
Well, we read the book. We've read the book, and she's watched our Kidonomics videos. So she likes the princesses and stuff. So
yeah.
So now I just try to engage her more on the story level. So we tell stories, and the book she really, really likes because she likes the fact that her sister
yeah.
off of that character. But in learning financial literacy for the 2-year-old, no, but it's learning numbers, right? So
right.
learning, because we start off at buying a castle at $25, and just learning counting, so in the counting section of that, so she's learning like how to count, and that's more relevant to her now. And then as she gets older, we'll start talking with the discussion questions in the back about, you know, like, well, why is this relevant?
Yeah.
Why do you want this? And could we do something else with the money? You know, you want this for your birthday. Could we do something else with the money? So,
absolutely.
Yeah, that's the discussions that that I will be eventually having with her. Right now it's more about, you know, just learning the numbers.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. I was watching your Kidonomics videos. So Kidonomics came after the book. Should we expect to see more Kidonomics videos on YouTube soon?
Absolutely. I am just in the process of putting a production team together. That's what I've been kind of waiting on, just putting a production team together to film more videos because these kids love YouTube.
Yeah.
They do tend to learn a lot of different things from YouTube. And, you know, if a parent could watch a video with their child and learn factual things in different departments of financial literacy. So there's savings, there's debt, there's credit, there's investing, right? There's so many different, there's accounting, there's taxes. Taxes is a really big component. And even though she's nine, she's not going to understand taxes yet, but filming a video about taxes is so vital because taxes is a huge component towards your financial literacy. But yeah, there's so many different aspects to financial literacy. And I think if there is just a place and a source that teachers or parents could go and say, hey, let's put on this video and we'll learn about whatever this topic is for the day, and then let's have a discussion around it.
Oh, for sure. So, or like kids even being like, you know, mommy, what are taxes? I don't understand that. And a lot of parents don't know how to explain that either. And they'll be like, okay, I have something for you.
Yeah.
And they'll put on your YouTube video. I think that's a great idea.
Thank you. Yeah. Like I know as a parent for myself, like I would have found that useful for myself. And so the role of Kiddynomics is really to evolve financial experts in different fields. So you learn from a financial expert, and then the kids can ask questions to the parents or to a teacher, or they can watch it together. But both people will definitely be learning and just come out more educated and to make better educated decisions as to what they would like to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It's been quite a joy being able to research you for this interview. And I found it very interesting that, you know, you are a woman in this field that has been in history pretty much dominated by men. And I also find it interesting that you have two young little girls too. Mm-hmm. I wanted to know if there's any time in this career you've had that you felt discriminated against because you're a woman.
Oh, excuse me. Tons and tons and tons of times.
Yeah.
Sometimes you don't even realize you are being discriminated against.
Yeah, because you're so used to it, right?
Yes, you become immune to something. And it's funny now in the era of the Me Too movement and the Time's Up movement and just like the era that we are in now. And I think back on, you know, like especially like when I started in the bank, and I remember a man coming into the bank and calling me the N-word.
Oh,
straight to my face.
I'm
in the middle
sorry.
Of the bank. And the funny thing was is that, well, it's not funny, but the thing was is that I went back and I told my branch manager, and all of the tellers heard, and I told my branch manager, and my branch manager said she had a conversation with him, and his excuse was that he has Tourette's. Right?
Oh.
And of course, he was never banned from coming to the bank, and I still had to serve him. Now, How do you evolve from that situation? And I've always remembered that situation for myself. And I wonder the me now and the me then. How would the me now have handled that situation? The me then was like, I didn't know what to do. I was so shocked and taken aback. I was so shocked.
Gosh.
And the me now would have just refused to service him, and the me then serviced him.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And because I thought that that's what I had to do, it was my job, and if I didn't do it, I would be the one in trouble, not him.
Right.
Right?
Absolutely.
And I think now I think, you know, and this was a good 20 years, 21 years ago, around that, 20 years ago. But I look at myself when I started out in my career in the financial industry, and being a minority and being a woman, there is a lot.
It's a lot to deal with.
It is, and a lot of times you don't even know. Like you really don't know that you are being discriminated against, or that was inappropriate, or somebody shouldn't have said that to you, or made you feel that way, or touched you in that manner, right? So,
Well, I think it's great to see you doing what you're doing, and I think it's definitely like an inspiration for other women too. Because I was thinking about this other day, in my own life, most of my financial advice have come from men, whether they're financial advisors or not. And I think like, why is this always happening? So I think it's refreshing to see a woman in the field trying to teach adults and children alike of financial literacy. I think it's great to see.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I try.
Yeah.
You know what? I've also had great female financial mentors. I think another thing, too, is, and I did a post one time on Facebook just thanking some of the female mentors. I've had two really great female mentors in my life. And I think that's really vital because, I don't know, sometimes in my field you feel very lonely because there is heavily dominated by men. But if you do find female leaders and mentors, I think it's also great to thank them and let them know
Yeah, absolutely.
Let them know how. I think it is so vital that we, as women, also acknowledge other women that have helped you along the way. And just thank a female mentor today. Find a, you know, a female, and hopefully that also induces other females.
Yeah.
To not be catty. It's not about rivalry. Like, just because, you know, the field is heavily dominated by one, that doesn't mean that there's only one female at the top, right? Like,
absolutely.
And so I really believe in, I guess, paying it forward.
Yeah.
And, you know, especially as women, men help men. I found that, you know,
yeah.
Men help men get into positions and certain certain positions that they would like to get into, right? And I think that in this era, I do see a lot more women, you know, helping other women get into a field and mm-hmm. elevating and escalating in a field that they want to get into.
Yeah. So. Yes. Sometimes just, you're right. Sometimes just a thank you, I appreciate you, I need you, is so important.
It is. And,
yeah.
and you know, and it's just, and sometimes they don't even, a woman may not even know that you consider them a mentor, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like so just let them know, thank you. Like, your advice that you gave to me at this point in time in my life helped me tremendously, and it helped me in this way. Like,
yeah.
that would touch any woman, and then it would also entice other women to do that more.
yeah, to know, like this is how it should be, this is what we should be doing, helping each
yeah.
other and pushing each other along, and it doesn't go unappreciated.
No.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, so I just say, thank a female member or mentor today. Thank a female mentor today.
Oh, that's nice. I like that. So let's get back to the Kittynomics here. What do you see for the future of your company here? What things do you have planned?
So what we would like is eventually get a TV production deal.
Okay.
To, like, even if it's on the CBS or, you know, one of the friendly channels.
Yeah.
And eventually what we will do is have, I don't know if it's going to be subscription-based, but it will have a component where you can have something monthly delivered to you that will help you help a child in financial literacy doing a project or a little thing to put together that relates to or discussing something to do with taxes, so that they get something that it's not just necessarily on YouTube, but that they also get something that they can have at home. To reach.
Absolutely.
So what we will have is the website will be built out that you can see activities to do and learn with your child.
Okay, so it'll be like books, activities, games, that kind of thing?
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Okay.
Along with the I Will Own a Castle, I plan on writing it as a series, so the child in the book will grow, and as she grows, her financial literacy evolves.
Oh, that's great.
In a series of books. Because right now, that the age group for that book is 6 to 8. And
your daughter's going to be famous.
I don't want to know fame, but I do know that it will help educate her and other kids. So I do like that component.
Yeah, that is
kids and
that
fame.
Is great, right? Because she probably goes to school and goes, look what my mommy did. This is me. And then everyone goes, oh, I want the book. It's a great little
marketing tool.
Yeah, they
read it in class. They love it. They read it in all of her classes, and they really enjoy. She really takes an extreme amount of pride in the book, which is really fabulous to see.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially as she grows older. So
yeah,
I'm really happy. It was a passion project of mine, and I'm really happy to see how much it has benefited her and other kids. That have read, and parents that have come up to me and said, you know what, I got this book and I didn't know it was you, but this is so amazing. We had the discussion afterwards, and even boys. So it's funny because I sometimes think, you know, castles and princesses leaning towards girls, but it's been interesting to see how little boys relate to the book.
And they like the aspect of spending money. They are like, you know, so the question is,
yes.
So if I have $25, I can buy a whole castle too.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
and it's
absolutely.
Like, and it's been really engaging to see them really light up their eyes and, okay, well, not necessarily $25 for a castle, but if you start with something, you can, if you save, you can buy something that you really want that's bigger. And they're like,
yeah.
Oh, okay, okay. So that concept really plays into them, which has been really remarkable to see, actually.
Yes, I think that's great. I can remember being a kid and finally starting to save up at some point, and it is like this very satisfying thing to see that money in that jar grow, right?
Right.
Yeah,
and then you eventually get to the goal. Like, you reach your goal, and you're like, yes, I did it.
I did it,
right?
Yeah.
That is the self-satisfying feel that you get and happiness that you get, that you didn't waste it on, like, you know, 5 cents candies.
Yeah.
You saved all that money to then get something that you really wanted, what is so phenomenal.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Jesus, this has been so great. So you're so full of great information. Let's wrap this up here. Let me know, where can we buy your book?
So I Will Own a Castle is available on basically any retailer: Chapters, Amazon, Amazon.com, Amazon.ca, Indigo, Barnes & Noble, my publisher site. You pretty much name it. It's anywhere.
That's awesome. And you can buy
Apple, iTunes, you can buy it there.
Right, because you can buy the physical book or the ebook as well, correct?
That's right.
Awesome. That's right. That's great. All right, anything else you would like anyone to know or anything to share before we sign off here?
No, I'd just like to wish everybody a happy holidays. And for 2020, I wish everybody health and prosperity. And just, I guess the one thing that I would take away from all of this conversation is helping to make saving the rule in your household.
Okay.
It will help really establish a healthy relationship towards financial literacy as your kids get older.
Okay. Awesome. Thanks so much, Stacey.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for spending the time with me and helping me spread the word of financial literacy for kids.
Yeah, I think it's very
exciting. And please remember that November is Financial Literacy Month for Canada.
Okay. November. See, I had no idea about that.
Yes, nobody does.
Nobody does. All right. Great. I had no idea.
Much.
Yeah,
I know it's not really promoted, but we do have a financial literacy month, and it's the month of November. So,
Okay, that's so great. Oh, thanks again for talking to me. This has been great. I hope this recording is okay for the radio, but they're pretty amazing over there.
I apologize for my daughter in the background a few times.
Oh.
I apologize.
Oh, no, that's okay. I'm talking from my house, too, and I have these dogs that live upstairs, and I'm thinking, like, where's the best place to talk in the house just in case they start barking, and I don't want it to pick up on the recording, but it's okay. It's all good. I don't know when the radio is planning to post this. I have a feeling it won't be till January because the holidays right now are kind of, things are kind of on a standstill. But I know just as much as you know right now about when they're going to post this. So I'll let you know, and unless they let you know first.
Okay, that sounds good. I thank you so much, and I'll look forward to hearing it in January. That'd be amazing.
Yeah, me too, me too. Okay, have a good day. Thanks for talking to me.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
Yeah, you too. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Kyra Carson in conversation with Stacey Brown, founder of groundbreaking Canadian children's financial programming, Kidinomics, and author of I Will Own a Castle. On Speak Up, CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, campus community radio from Simon Fraser University. I'm Jesse. Right now, you're hearing a track from the new record by local profanity-laced named artist S. Lord Efferman. This is Vacation of the Mind, Green, Blue, Green. Thank you. Vacation of the Mind, Green Blue Green, from Music Is Over by S. Lord Efferman. There's some swears in there. You can figure out if you use the internet. Great record by Vancouver's own. And right now, some more Vancouver music from their label, or from their new record, Aw. This is Woolworm. Let Me Wear the Mask. Oh,
So I think I might listen now. Hands tied behind your back, maybe feel like you can't breathe. Well, just stop for me, baby, cause you do that for me, please. And I don't even wanna ask, but let me. On a chilly day, midwinter, you notice a large nest made of sticks high in a leafless cottonwood. Atop the nest sits a large, dark shape, its broad head sporting two ear-like tufts, suggesting a cat's ears. A female great-horned owl is incubating two eggs. A light snow falls on her back as her mate roosts unseen in a nearby conifer. Since December, this pair has been hooting back and forth regularly at night. Why risk the year's most severe weather by nesting now? Probably because great-horned owlets, which hatch after a month of incubation, must remain near their parents a long time compared to many other birds, right through summer and into early fall. During this time, young owls learn the skills they need to hunt on their own before the rigors of the next winter set in. This adaptive strategy has proven very successful. Great-horned owls are the supreme predatory nightbirds from the northernmost forests of Canada to Tierra del Fuego. We have a photo of that owl covered in snow on our Facebook page. Have a look. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
It was
White Walls by What? A new record coming out on February 14th, reportedly on Pure Gold Cassette. 100 tapes only. The new track, White Walls, a very familiar story to anyone who has witnessed gentrification. This speaking, of course, more specifically about Vancouver and the ongoing trend of was something. Now it's a coffee shop. I am Jesse. This is Speak Up. We have about another 10 minutes left in the show that is going to be filled mostly with music and a little bit of information. And yeah, and then after that will be Democracy Now! At 11 a.m. You can stick around all day for cool stuff on the radio. Hot Fried Chicken Show is at noon for blues, rock, new music. A couple jambalayas in the afternoon. And then Free Voices, which is one of my favorite local shows here, featuring the folks from the Eagle Nation Universal Production Society. So yeah, keep it tuned here to CJSF. And I will be right back.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Athletes from around the world plan to play a hockey match in April. They'll be surrounded not by bleachers of adoring fans, but by a vast expanse of snow and ice. And maybe a passing polar bear. Sergei Rybakov is helping organize the event near the North Pole.
It's a project that is about bringing everyone, all the countries, all the sportsmen, all the people together on one topic, climate change.
Global warming is rapidly melting Arctic sea ice, so the event is being billed as the first and last hockey game to be played at the North Pole. A slew of organizations and sports figures are involved. The UN Environment Program is helping lead the effort. It was spearheaded by Slava Fetisov, a legendary Russian hockey player. Mike Richter, formerly of the New York Rangers, is on the roster, as are players from Russia, Canada, Scandinavian countries, and beyond. Rybakov says it provides an opportunity for each well-known athlete to learn firsthand about melting Arctic ice. Then they can give interviews and share the information with others.
Be an ambassador in their own country about what is going on globally.
For this game, the ultimate goal is to bring attention to the climate crisis. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
Hi, we are Yaleers.
I'm Javin, and I play keyboards and sing in Young Pacific.
I'm Nathaniel. I play guitar and sing in Dead Soft.
Since moving to BC, I've been a huge fan of Emily Carr's art.
I wrote a lot of it on the road. That was our first real tour.
What role do you think time plays in transforming something into art?
We've arrived at sexual maturity as a band.
The Arts Show, every Thursday from 5 to 6 p.m. right here on CJSF 90.1 FM.
Studio 6, CJSF's video series, captures high-quality video recordings of live performances.
I think it was a bunch of different things. Like, I was getting tired of writing about myself, and I was looking for new inspiration, and I thought it would be a good way to develop some lyrical material that would be exploring... It could explore many different sub-themes within the context.
And interviews with impactful and inspiring artists, as well as engaging conversations with community members about the issues that are most important to their communities. Watch all of the Studio 6 live sessions on CJSF's YouTube page or on our website at cjsf.ca/studio6.
Hey, you heard the man. Go check out Studio 6, cjsf.ca/studio6. You can find us that on our YouTube page as well. If you just search CJSF Studio 6 in the YouTube search bar, we got all sorts of videos going up, new ones being posted all the time. Great performances with real great musical production. And I think our most recent one is Girl Snails, who are a sort of mathy, weird, cool group. So you should go check that out because I told you to. And also because it's good and you'll enjoy it. And just trust me. Go check it out. I have one more song to share with you this hour before Democracy Now! Takes it over. And I'm very excited about a upcoming record by Vancouver band Lié. They have a record called You Want It Real is the name of the record. And the first single that has been released from the record that comes out February 28th is Digging in the Desert. So here's that. And I'll see you next week.
For a CJSF Heritage Minute. During the 80s and the 90s, CJSF